Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. Eric Payne will be calling in later. I think Congressman Donald Payne Jr. will be calling in later. And also, we are going to be waiting for Wayne Gilman. And we are all co-hosts of Kay Thompson Live. And boy, do we have a story for you today, stories that are, you know, really depressing because they involve police action around the state. They also involve people demonstrating and going to be, you know, really, really rallying for justice in the various states. We have been hearing on television and radio about the different things happening, and we certainly want to let people know about it. We also are going to be talking about the Donald Payne Global Foundation organization, and you're going to be hearing more about that. And this is about Donald Payne Sr. and his good work, being the New Jersey's first African-American United States congressman who used his global influence to work towards eradicating health and education disparities, promoting peace and youth development, and uplifting the human condition worldwide. Now, isn't that something that he had been doing that for years and years, ever since I had known Donald when we used to teach together, as a matter of fact, in Passaic, New Jersey. So, and now we see that this country is going backwards. There are a lot of police killings. Police shootings. Yes, I said killings. We also are going to be, let me tell you about what was happening out the other night at Bethany Baptist Church in Newark, one of the most prominent African-American churches in the country. And they are so way ahead of things. They do social and programs involving things that happen in the African-American community and in other communities that people should be aware of. And also, they have jazz there, jazz information and jazz clubs and music there. So they are quite ahead of their time. As a matter of fact, the other night, Larry Ham, who's going to be on the show, and Cornel West, I'm going to be talking about him. Larry Ham is an activist. He's a Princeton graduate. He is a Princeton graduate. Anyway, they were at Bethany Baptist Church in Newark, and there was a call for action because Larry Ham and Cornel West were on the same program, and we expect to be talking to Larry very, very shortly. They were talking about demonstrations. They were talking about people getting involved and coming out and protesting and just really making people know, you know, aware of the things going around in the country. It seems like we're going backwards instead of forward. Anyway, there were 500-plus people at Bethany Baptist Church the other night, and people came out to hear what they could do, why they were, you know, being treated this way as usual. And I say as usual because there's a lot. We are finding out more and more about, you know, killing of young black males, old black males, as a matter of fact. I think you've all seen it on television and you've heard it on radio just like anyone else. And while we're waiting for Wayne Gilman to call in and Larry Ham, I'm going to be telling you exactly what they were talking about. There was a case in Irvington, New Jersey, and I understand there was a young man was killed by police in Irvington, New Jersey. We're going to be hearing more about that. That was a little while ago, so we're going to have to find out exactly what the mother was doing about that. So now we are going to be talking to, let's get this caller on the line and see exactly who that is, the 718 caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. If it's me you're talking to, Kay.
Yes, because
Kay,
I don't recognize that number. Yes, we can hear you, Wayne. How are you?
Hi, how you doing?
Fine. I didn't recognize that number. That's why we didn't come to you right away.
Oh, okay. Not a problem. You know, I try to keep it private, especially for my creditors. You know, but I was listening to most of your opening, and I'm just really, really amazed. In the space of 1 week, we're still with this issue of police shooting, you know, black folk, and the level of pro contestation is rising, which is a good thing. And it's just hard to believe after all these years that we're still covering the same events, and it just seems to be no end to it.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing. As many events as happen, you know, these killings by police departments around the country, we're going to be talking about them here on KJOMS Alive. This has gotten out of hand. I mean, not that it was ever in hand, but at least we have stopped hearing so much about these things by police. This is killings by police. This is murder by police. This young man in Irvington, for instance, we have to find out more about that. And Larry, when he comes on, he's going to be talking to us about that. Also, there was something in Newark about an investigation into the Irvington affairs, and that's going to be, you know, we're going to be hearing more about that. It seems that this young man was shot, and he was killed and was shot 9 times? Wow, I'll have to check into that, but this is the information that I have, but we're going to be getting more information about that. This was in Irvington, I understand.
Irvington.
I haven't even heard about it until I got the information. Also, there was another person shot down in Bridgeton, New Jersey. I think his name was Reed, I'm reading, but it's Jerome Reed. I don't want to be wrong with this information, but it did come from good sources, and it came from, you know, the press and whatnot. And Jerome is from Newark. You know, this was a call for a special prosecutor because this case is being taken out of they want to be taking the case out of Cumberland County. And then there's the case of, you know, Mumia Amun-Jamal. He's been in jail for a long period of time, you know, ever since we've been on the air, you know, at WRB.
Right.
And what had happened here is that a young third grade school teacher, who is a model teacher, you know, she had the kids write letters to Mumia Amun-Jamal. Now, people who have been involved in the fight for freedom and civil rights, they know Mumia Amun-Jamal. He needs medical attention. He is in jail. He's been there forever. And the case it had so much nonsense about it, about him being arrested and what did he do. I think it was a police action that he was involved in, but well, I'm going to be doing more research on that because we used to know all about this at WLIV. And I remember that it was really a horrible case. Couldn't get him out of jail. He's been in jail like forever. So,
he was accused, Kay, of shooting a Philadelphia police officer. And it's been long said that, you know, it was a case of mistaken identity. And he's been serving time. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. So many people have come out, you know, short of the Pope, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but so many people have come out to support this man, leading entertainers, educators, and yet he's been still serving time, and no one has seen to it to reopen the case. But I think what's so despicable about the situation in Jersey there with the teacher, she was under the direction, from what I understand, a leading educator at Rutgers University in handing out this assignment. You know, that there was a second component to this case, and it's just unfortunate that, you know, they're looking to take her livelihood away, young teacher at that, and you know, this is a current event situation. This is not something that is considered obscene or immoral. You know, it's a story.
Yeah. And you know one thing, this is going to even, I think we're going to be hearing about a demonstration regarding this. Also, there's the story, too, or the matter of we are always hearing about black males being in the large majority of being incarcerated. And there's a lot of people in the jails that shouldn't be there. Okay, but anytime there are even minor things that it seems this way that police can get a hold of, involving any kind of minor thing that a black male is involved with, he immediately ends up in jail and also with extra long sentences. And then we have a lot of blacks in jail, black men in jail, and then what happens to the whole, you know, incarceration or jail system? What happens is that it becomes business. It becomes businesses for large businesses because they invest in it. Okay, it's just that, you just have to lay out that sort of truth. It is the truth.
Right. there's no question about that. It has become big business. It's like part of corporate America around the country. You don't hear much of it in the East Coast that much, with the exception of places upstate New York. But a lot of economies have been built, in especially a lot of the rural areas of the country, on the prison population, knowing full well that they're people. And many of these people are Tea Partiers and people who belong to some highly right-wing organizations who are hired to look after the populace, which is largely Black and Latino and other people of color, unfortunately.
And you know, Wayne, I've said this before, and I hate them all. I hate to think that I'm right in any sense of the word. But, you know, I think this could be an organized effort going around now, different police departments, you know, in this country to make sure you put, you know, as many people in jail as possible, because it is big business. It is big business for big businesses. And
right.
I think that maybe this is part of the remnants of the Klan. And I don't know if too many people really know about or had heard of the Ku Klux Klan. But they were a dangerous organization. And they went around killing, murdering, hanging people, et cetera, et cetera. So I hope we're not going backwards. We heard about somebody being hung. Was that down in Florida or something? When did that happen? They found a man.
I think it was Alabama, if I'm not mistaken, about a month ago or maybe earlier this month. I've forgotten. There have been so many cases, it's hard to keep abreast of everything that's going on. But, you know, the fact of the matter is there is an element in society. And just recently there was a survey in which they have found that the state of New York and, if I'm not mistaken, Pennsylvania, those two states, Jersey wasn't cited so much, and I think Connecticut, surprisingly enough, was the least involved in terms of clandestine Klan-like activity by different organizations, you know. Maybe not in the metropolitan area of New York City and the surrounding suburbs, but certainly as you go into northern New York and northwestern New York and eastern and western Pennsylvania, there are a lot of populations out there in which these people exist, and they slip through the cracks. And some of the stories are reported on these people where they've done things to offend the existing populace, and then there are others who've gotten away with basically murder, you know?
We're going to go to Larry Hamm right now. Wayne, let's see if we can get him on the line. Are you there, Larry?
Okay.
Are you there, Larry Hamm?
Good evening,
Larry.
Wayne, how you doing, man?
It's good to hear your voice again. I had a chance to listen a little bit to WBAI today, and I heard you guys were mentioned, you and Dr. West, and Kay filled me in on the event last night. I'm sorry I couldn't participate.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a good event. I'm glad we did it, and there was a strong response from the – I was surprised how strong a response there was from the community, you know. We New York City, you know, does things on a scale that most folks around the country don't. So when we get a turnout of like 500 people to a program, that's pretty big doings for us.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of the political activity has shifted out of New York and into Newark, you know, because I see, if I might for a minute, Kay, it just saddens me what goes on in places that used to be our strongholds, like North Central Brooklyn, and even Harlem to a lesser extent, except for the National Action Network and United African Movement by Brother Alton Maddox. You know, you seldom hear of activities going on a regular basis.
But, you know, with
Larry?
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit. How can I say this? I am somewhat aware of activities by other organizations. I think some of the other organizations suffer from some of the same challenges that the People's Organization for Progress suffered. The People's Organization for Progress is a somewhat more progressive, some might even say more radical organization than the conventional civil rights organization. So there's a reluctance, even though we probably get more coverage than most other grassroots organizations in our area, there's still, you know, I get a sense that there's somewhat of a reluctance to cover our events the way some of the more conventional civil rights organizations are covered. So, like in New York, in Harlem, you have the December 12th movement. They're pretty active, you know, and in Queens, you have Simotep.
Yeah, Simotep. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right, Larry. I forgot
right,
about that.
Right.
And
right.
with
but,
the Lambe Brat's death. Go ahead. I'm
right.
sorry.
That's right. And the Patrice Lumumba Coalition. And I'm just saying that these organizations are very active, but they don't get the press coverage, say, that the National Action Network will get or the NAACP will get. So when out of sight is out of mind, right? So when people come up to me all the time, they say, well, like even at the program we had the other night, a woman came up to me and said, well, why don't y'all do more about boycotting the banks, right? People's Organization for Progress, we're the only organization that has held protests at every major bank in Newark because mm-hmm. of the level of foreclosures that were going on. Essex County has one of the highest levels of foreclosures in the state of New Jersey and one of the highest levels of foreclosures in the nation. And we have called for people to boycott the banks, and we have had demonstrations. We've called on people. We stood right there in front of the bank, told people, take your money. Don't bank here because they're closing off people's homes all over your community.
Well, I tell you personally, I'd like to call a bank right now, but unfortunately I still have a mortgage with them. But I know there's one out there in Jersey I'd like to see you go out there and protest in front of. I'll join you as soon as I get my business.
Well, we've been in front of Wells Fargo. We've been in front of Chase. We've been in front of Citibank. We've been in front of all of them. But if it's not in the newspaper or if it's not on television, people don't see it. Then they think that you're not doing anything on these issues. You know, it's like if a tree falls in the forest and you're not in the forest, do you know that the tree fell? You know, so you don't
exactly.
know the tree falls. You know what I'm saying? Right. So the media plays an increasingly important role as mm-hmm. things develop. You know, and go ahead, Kay. I'm sorry, I run on and on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and on that level, Larry. You know, what the organizations have to do is to let the media know that something is going on. For instance, we have been doing this show since, what was it, Wayne, since 2000, was it 10 or 9?
Actually,
that's
you started before I could, you know,
yeah.
So you've been
started.
On, I know, at least 5 years already.
Yeah.
It seems
and
like yesterday, but yeah.
If I don't go out to get the information, I don't get it. And if I don't see
right.
it, you know, and listen, I'm really a little slow here on social media, you know, but if I don't get on this computer, I've learned a lot, you know, talking to my grandchildren. But the point is, you know, if people can let me know, I was on WLIB, my name is still out there, but if you don't call me, we're on Facebook, you know, even the interview with Amiri and Amina Baraka was on there.
Uh-huh.
If you look at if you look to YouTube, you'll see an interview with Kay Thompson. And Amiri Baraka. That was about 3 weeks before Amiri died. You know,
wow.
So people have to let us know. And, you know, since we are in the area, you know, Larry, if the other organizations would let us know, I often call, you know, the Bethany Baptist Church and find out from some of my relatives who go there what's going on. And then I'll call
mm-hmm.
and find out about different jazz things going on. So, you know, it's really very
right.
important to let people know.
Right. Right. That's something that we have to do better at is our
yeah.
media work, and that also contributes to the lack of coverage. So yes, we
right.
have
if you let people
some,
know
some
that
responsibility in there too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're
well, you know what?
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
If organizations let people know that we exist, you know, and that we can get, you know, the ears of the press through this show because we're heard all over the world. We're on internet radio. I had to understand that what my brother-in-law, Donald Payne Sr., had told me, you know, don't you understand what the internet is? I said, no, what is it? Because I had, you know, I scheduled him one time on a Wednesday. and he said, I said, Donald, don't forget, you're going to have to talk at 8 o'clock. And he said, oh, I'm going to be in Somalia on this and this time, and then Ethiopia, and then Johannesburg. I said, what are you talking about? I said, you're due the next day. He said, Kay, he said, I'll be in these three places because you're on the internet. You're heard globally. That was the first time I heard that, and that was in, what, 2009. That was when we started this thing. And then, so it's not that we won't put it in there, but the organizations have got to know that we will cover the stories if they contact us.
Okay.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, Larry, but go ahead with that.
No. You hit a nail on the head. So I will do more to make sure that my organizational partners and allies and friends know about you so that when they have events, they'll send you their press releases.
And then
that way you'll know what's good. Like today, right? Today is a good example.
Yeah.
There was a major march in Newark, New Jersey today. There's a coalition called 15 Now New Jersey that is marching to increase, and they marched in New York too, right, Wayne?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
They marched today for a $15 per hour minimum wage, which
exactly.
I think is a just demand. And they had quite a number of people out there coming down Broad Street today. They started with a rally at City Hall, and then they marched down to the McDonald's in Newark, downtown Newark, and they protested in front of there. And I would say they had maybe a good 300 people marching with them, maybe even more than that. And it was, you know, it was labor. It was like $11.99 and what's the other one? SEIU and Working Families Party, and they're all under this umbrella of 15 Now New Jersey. So, you know, that was all. In fact, it was a national day of demonstrations all over the country.
I was just going to say.
For $15. And I think that's a just demand. The other demand that I support, and this is with another group that invited me to speak to them, the Interfaith Prison Coalition. There's a whole coalition of groups that have come together to demand economic reforms in the prison system here in New Jersey. And one of the things that they're demanding is that the minimum wage for prisoners be increased. Most people would be aghast if I told them what the minimum wage for prisoners is. It's 22 cents an hour. A prisoner in 22 cents an hour. A prisoner in New Jersey makes $1.30 per day. And so this coalition of churches, the Interfaith Prison Coalition, I spoke at their conference in Newark. It was held at the Elmwood Presbyterian Church in Newark, and they want to see prisoners get the minimum wage the current minimum wage for the state is $8.38. And I think that's a just demand because, see, many people don't know that when a person is released from prison in New Jersey, they have all kinds of fees, all kinds of back charges, that the law requires them to pay. Someone just called me the other day with a police brutality case. And you know what the police brutality case arose out of? It arose out of the fact that this man was stopped. He had his family with him. He was stopped on the parkway. The police said he had a warrant. You know what the warrant was for? It didn't have anything to do with his driving. Warrant was for that there was an outstanding surcharge on his probation. These prisoners have to pay all kinds of surcharges. And so because he had missed one payment or something like that, there was a warrant out for him, and they had to arrest him. And he initially went willingly, but then they handcuffed him and threw him on the hood of the car and banged his face into the hood of the car. And then, of course, that started a scuffle. And before it was all over, he's in the jail in the state trooper's barracks, and they put a bail on him of like $25,000. So he had to sit without the 10%. So who has that kind of money? So he had to sit all weekend because we don't, unlike New York State, we don't have weekend court in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So he had to sit all weekend in jail until a judge on Monday could set a reasonable bail for him. But you know,
unbelievable.
And then you have these telephone companies like I think it's called Global Tech. For a 3-minute call, a family, you know, prisoner will call out and reverse $4.22 for the first 3 minutes. They're making literally billions of dollars off of prisoners' families across the country.
What we know is that businesses are making money from the prisoners. And the prisoners,
of course,
are mainly African Americans and Latinos.
That's right.
For the minor things, did this happen in New Jersey?
Yes, it did. It happened on
What part of New Jersey?
It was I think they were coming on the parkway and they were coming through Bloomfield when it happened.
From Bloomfield.
Because they took them up to the barracks there. I don't know if you're aware, but there's a state trooper barracks between Bloomfield and Montclair there, around that area. They took them there. But the prison industry is one of the most dynamic industries in America. We don't produce anything else now. Everything else we produce is produced abroad, where they pay people over there $1.22 an hour who are not in prison, you know.
Larry,
right now, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hate to interrupt you, but we also have another person on the line. I think they want to come in. Hello, are you there, caller? Are you there?
Are you talking to the 954?
You're 954, yes, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mrs. Payne. This is Gwen Thomas from Passaic. I wanted to say that hanging was from Mississippi recently, and I wanted to add that. And I wanted to, I'm sorry to change the subject, but to thank you so much for your tribute to Dr. Ben. And I would like to let everybody know that you and Congressman Payne and Jean Burwell, you all came to Passaic, and you really did save our lives. I hope you remember me, Sissy Thomas. I was one of your students, and you all have just done a wonderful job. If you had not come to Passaic, all of us would probably be dead or in prison because we had no black teachers. We had no one to love us. And you all came in the 50s, 60s, and you really changed our lives. And I found you looking for tributes to Dr. Ben. So I would like for you to keep my number and give me a call so we can talk off the air about all of the work that you inspired us to do by being so strong.
I am taking it down right now, and I promise you I will call you within a day, maybe even if it's not true. Okay? Yes, I remember the name. I'm sorry?
Yes, you will remember me because I was quite active, and you were really strong enough to put someone like me in check, and you'll be quite surprised at all the things I have done since you.
Oh, my goodness. I'm anxious to hear it. I will call you. Thank you for calling in.
Look forward. Thank you for doing everything you have always done.
Thank you very much. That's very nice of you. Well, I feel a little bit better.
Okay, that's very touching. I tell you,
that's
so commendable.
What a tribute. What a tribute.
I know. Beautiful.
So anyway,
beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to be in touch with her. Now, Larry, let's get back to that, you know, that meeting that was so dynamic. My daughter and I couldn't spend the whole time there. But, you know, and even Dr. Howard, you know, he said, I'm going to get right to you and Cornel West. And I was so sad that I didn't hear the rest of this. Now, are people, what's going to be the result of this? I mean, this, you had a lot of people there, and everybody was just hungering for, you know, information.
Well, the result, the theme of the program was a dialogue between Larry Ham, and, well, let me put it right, a dialogue between Dr. Cornel West and People's Organization for Progress Chairman Larry Ham on police brutality, racial injustice, economic inequality, and social transformation. That was the title of the forum. And the forum title was really drawn from a project that we have coming up, which we call the Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice, and Economic Inequality, which is going to take place on Saturday, July 25th, 2015, in Newark, New Jersey. So
Saturday,
we
what,
hope.
Give the date again.
Yes, Saturday, July 25th, 2015, in Newark, New Jersey. And the march will start at 12 noon from the Lincoln Monument in downtown Newark. And so the object, the overall object of the forum was to try to get people involved in the work of building this march. Although we didn't talk a whole lot about the march itself, we talked more about the issues identified in the march and the forum, which is police brutality, racial injustice, and economic inequality. But at the end of the forum, we talked about the upcoming march. And we invited people to get involved in the work of building for that march, which is roughly going to happen roughly 100 days from now. And so we encourage people to come to the weekly People's Organization for Progress meetings held every Thursday at the Abyssinian Baptist Church, 224 West Kenny Street in Newark. And that's where the work goes on, the planning goes on for the march. And we have a whole slew of committees that people can sign up for and get involved in. But we also tried to use the forum as an opportunity to let people know about some of the other things that other organizations are doing. For instance, that group I talked about struggling for a minimum wage of $15 an hour. And by the way, do you know what the minimum wage would be if it had kept pace with inflation since 1967? The minimum wage, the minimum now, not the living wage, the minimum wage had it kept pace with inflation would be $21.68 an hour. That's
Look
what
at
the
that.
Minimum wage, that's what it should be had it kept pace with inflation. And anybody that's out here struggling to make a living knows that you can't live off of a $7.25 federal minimum wage or an $8.38 minimum wage. The average rent in this area of Jersey is now about $1,200 a month. That's the average rent. You can't make that. There's no way you can make that with one minimum wage job. And you might not, you would barely make it with two. If you paid your rent, you wouldn't have anything left over. You know, people in America are really suffering. But for whatever the reasons are, people have not gotten to the point yet where they're saying enough is enough.
I hear you, Larry. I mean, I'm about to, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but, you know, I'm a landlord. I do real estate full-time now and in the state of New York. And I feel for you. I feel for all those people out there who are faced with the situation that many of us struggle with because, you know, the shelters are swelling. And unfortunate how some of the people are living in some of the conditions. I can tell you in the five boroughs of New York, all the shelters are like really, you know, they're at the brim. You know, there are programs where the mayor is trying to give out an incentive to landlords where I think they're giving you $1,000 to bring these people in. But a lot of, it's not just that alone, just to get them out of the shelters. A lot of these people need, you know, personally rehabilitation and things like that.
Right.
And it's right. It's shameful what people are going through. And, you know, I was talking to Kay earlier today. I'm astonished. You know, rent is that high in Jersey, and you got a sitting governor who's calling for an increase in the retirement age, you know, saying that more money could be saved, you know, if people took Social Security at 69. Well, I know people dying at 60 after 30 years of work. You know, I can't begin to tell you how many people I've worked alongside of who are underground 6 feet and died way before their time. And this man is seeking the national office?
I mean, he reflects the thinking of the right wing of the Republican Party. And he's really catering now, you know, being desperate, you know. The governor's
he is desperate.
The governor's poll numbers are really not slipping. They are falling fast. In fact, they just took a poll, and the majority of New Jerseyans, they didn't say the majority of black New Jerseyans, they said the majority of Jerseyans do not think that Governor Christie would make a good president. And and so now with these slipping poll numbers, he's desperate. So he's really catering to that Republican right wing, which is flush with the money of the Koch brothers and others.
Exactly.
You know, so he's catering, he's putting out all of these right wing think tank proposals. Like, I mean, why don't they just say it's going to be no more retirement and you're going to work till the day you die?
Thank you.
They just say that because that's what they want. Because what they have been working on, their project for the last 10 to 15 years has really been the undoing of the New Deal. This is a struggle that has been going on for 75 years. And, you know, people should know, of course, people should know African-American history, but people should also know labor history, and they should know the history of social justice in the United States. Because all of it's really intertwined. Before the 1930s, there was no Social Security. And the rich people, the wealthy people, the wealthy class in America, even though Roosevelt was one of their own, he was a millionaire, he was from a blue blood family, they hated Roosevelt. They hated the New Deal. They didn't want Social Security. They even campaigned against a labor law. They took Roosevelt to court on the question of a minimum wage. And at that time, Roosevelt was only proposing a minimum wage of 25 cents an hour. But because before the New Deal, there was no minimum wage, there was no unemployment insurance, there was no Social Security, and Roosevelt was essentially trying to talk sense, economic class. He was saying, look, guys, if we keep going the way we're going, we're going to have a social revolution in America like they just had in Russia, because that was the big fear at the time. You know, the Russian Revolution was the first communist revolution, and they didn't want this revolutionary fervor to sweep into the United States. So Roosevelt would say, if we don't do something to take care of our own working class here, they're going to turn to the communists and the Bolsheviks. So he proposed these things, and what did they do? They started a smear campaign against Roosevelt to make people think that he had lost his mind, that his polio was affecting his brain.
Not to cut you off, Larry, but I mean, the thing with all due respect, I don't think Social Security was really a requirement until the late 1950s. So we're talking about Truman and Eisenhower, because my dad, who was already a citizen of this country, started working for the federal government as a postal worker in the early 50s, and he died a year ago. He never had Social Security. Wasn't a requirement.
Wow.
And he put 40 years in the PO.
Right.
You know?
It was phased in over time. And another part, you know, and again, there's always a racial component to everything.
Exactly.
you know, another, even though the New Deal was a good thing for working people in general,
yeah,
the truth of the matter is that the benefits of the New Deal were not made available to many, many, many African Americans because the categories of work that African Americans were in were excluded when the first New Deal laws were written. So you're right. Many of our grandparents did, and maybe even many of our parents did not get the Social Security benefits and the other benefits.
Exactly.
That didn't become possible until the anti-discrimination laws started to come in effect, you know, and that really started with A. Philip Randolph when he threatened the first March of Washington in 43.
Larry, I hate to interrupt you, but we're running out of time here because I have a couple other people that are calling in. But, you know, you're going to come on again, I hope. Larry, you're going to join us again, right?
Oh, of course.
Larry,
absolutely.
Yeah. I never get tired of talking to you. You know, really, because you have so much information everybody needs. But I want to say one thing, too. Stanley Nelson, you know, who wrote the Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, you know,
mm-hmm,
he was going to win the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be speaking in Montclair, New Jersey. And I'll tell you another thing. He's talking about the Black Panthers. And guess who has the book on the Black Panthers sitting right in front of me? The name of the book, Larry Edwin, is The Revolutionary Suicide. And guess who the author is? What?
Huey Newton.
Huey Newton. And I have his book sitting right in front of me. All right?
That's right.
Just what you know.
All right.
Larry, thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Larry, good to talk to you again.
Okay.
All right, Wayne. Take care. Good night.
Wayne, isn't that amazing? Larry, it's so much information. And,
yeah, I tell you. I mean, he's a walking anthology, you know?
Yeah. The reason why we had to leave was because of the fact that we're expecting Eric to call in, Eric Payne to call in, my son, and also Congressman Donald Payne Jr. to call in. And I want to talk about Donald Payne Sr.'s foundation. This is the Global Foundation. And what it does is it's set up because Donald also had, he was doing work, and it was global, all right, because he was doing, you know, the African countries. I want to thank the caller. That called me from Passaic, I think it was, and because I will be talking to her later. But I wanted to talk about this also, about the, about the Global Foundation. This is a foundation that was set up to continue Donald Payne Sr.'s legacy, and that is because the foundation is continuing the work of the first African-American United States congressman who used his global influence to work towards eradicating health and education disparities. And he also was promoting peace, youth, and uplifting the human condition worldwide. And that's Donald Payne Sr. A lot of people don't know that Donald, as quiet as he was doing an awful, awful lot. And
he was a mover and shaker for sure.
Yeah. And he went to Africa. He was, President Obama had, you know, appointed him to be a key person in the African countries. Of course, Ireland respected Donald because of the fact that they just loved him because of the fact that he was always concerned about what was happening, between the two religious groups in Ireland. And he also... He also provided monies to go to these areas, you know, to help them. And so they were, you know, really, they really, really liked the congressman, you know, as young as he was. And he was, he says he was an educator. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but he was an educator. And he was a former school teacher. And the young lady who called in, you know, she comes from the school where Donald and I had taught. As a matter of fact, he had gotten me my first teaching job, and that was in Passaic, New Jersey. So he was a former school teacher, as I was saying, and the national president of the YMCA. So he was setting up these seminars and conferences for young people to attend. And they were able to go to, you know, several European countries at that time. And I remember that Donald Payne Jr. and Eric went to Europe. They went to Russia. Whew, that was an experience that Eric will have to tell you about.
Wow.
But they were able to go with a group of young people through the YMCA. I remember when the YMCA was very, very strong and powerful. I don't think I hear too much about it now. I maybe didn't think, maybe
no.
I'll just have it. Have you heard
No, no, you're
that?
Right, Kay. No,
yeah.
not even on this side. I mean, I know people who still support, but programs like that, you don't really hear much about at all.
Yeah, And what another thing that Donald did, too, you know, and I really was very proud of him because he did these things quietly. You would almost have to pull the information out of him for him to let people know what he was doing. And he was with John Lewis and some high school students when they were involved with the Gear Up program at New Jersey Institute of Technology. In other words, they were involved in closing the achievement gap in education. You know, we all need to know some work to do that with, you know, the students, you know. And it did not finish with his legacy and his organization, and if people wanted to be involved, and if they even wanted to send a donation, just look up the Donald M. Payne CU Global Foundation, because it is a good organization and it is doing a lot. For instance, Donald, with the Global Foundation, was assisting 500 orphans, African-American kids living in a Kenyan refugee camp. Provided them books and school supplies, you know. And after they lost their parents to war, these youngsters in grade 1 through 6 were given an education and were fed during the time that they were in school. So that's just some of the things that I know about personally, you know, that he was doing. He was a very special person. Never asked for anything for himself. I mean, people kept re-electing him because he was doing something. And, you know, Donald did it quietly. He had a very quiet voice. Wasn't like another person I know of.
You want to call the name?
No, because he's continuing this foundation for his brother. But that was powerful. He says, remember, he used to say that nothing is as powerful as a dream whose time has come. And he said sometimes the political leader is marching a little in front or a little bit behind the people, but once in a while, the marcher and the drumbeat are in exactly the same cadence, and then finally good things happen. So
that's
the quote.
To hear.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful quote. Yeah,
he was very, very involved with it. I'm telling you, he couldn't do anything bad. You know, he just was, and he lived it. He just loved doing things for people.
And it was, the one thing I might say, Kay, if I might interrupt, is that you never heard of a scandal associated with Donald Payne. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people who go through Congress, and I'm sorry to say, I mean, even people who look like us. And there's always something that you will hear every once in a while that's untoward them or, you know, something that you would not expect from someone in our community, especially people that we hold in high esteem. But, you know, he was a guy who went through, I believe he served, 41 years or 40, I know it was over 40 years. And
I got the number, but a lot.
But, you know, as you said, quiet, charismatic, very, very progressive in his ability to get things done, and these people need to be memorialized and talked about, so at least there's some sort of track record to go on when people pursue this office.
I think that Congressman Donald Payne Jr., he's doing quite well because he has that quiet demeanor also. Do you know one thing? I never heard Donald Payne Sr. raise his voice.
Wow.
Is that when he taught class, now I've sat in on many of his classes, and when he taught class, he spoke in a very calm voice, a very low voice. Me, on the other hand, you may hear me screaming and yelling and having fun with the kids, but no, he was, really quite, soft-spoken, and I never really understood it. Not that I didn't understand it, but, I never even thought about that before. But Donald never raised his voice.
Wow.
Because he never had to raise his voice. When he would walk in the classroom, the kids would just automatically get quiet. And he loved the kids. You know, he was crazy about little kids, big kids, although, you know, of course, but he didn't know.
Yeah.
But he had to take me, give me a ride to school every day.
Okay.
Oh, God, I tell you.
You get your way, buddy.
He also, what this foundation does, too, is they assist over 500 orphaned African-American children living in mainly a Kenyan refugee camp that he was involved with books and school supplies. So after losing their parents to, you know, war or disease, these kids in grades 1 through 6, they get an education, and they're also fed while they're in school. So, this is really, you know, as a former educator, you know, I like that kind of thing. It was praised by Nelson Mandela, met him, knew him, and as the chairman of the Subcommittee on Africa for the Congressional Foreign Affairs Committee, Donald Drew praise and, you know, lots of praise from many leaders on the continent, including South Africa's Nelson Mandela. So, really powerful, powerful.
Yeah.
So,
I'm just wondering, you know, how things would be to how he would interpret, you know, the climate, the political climate today, not just in New Jersey, but across the country, you know, with all the violence that black people, you know, are now facing, you know, and when you juxtapose all the work that he did to bring about progress and to see what goes on, I kind of wonder what his thoughts would be if he were to, you know, give us a thumbnail sketch of as to what he thinks is wrong and how we should go about changing it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I also, you know, I want to mention, too, now this has nothing to do with what we've been talking about, but since we're talking about students, there's a new photographer that I want to mention. Her name is Rebecca Davis, and she has been showing her photographs. Are you with me? Hello,
yeah.
Wayne? Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, at St. Elizabeth Church in Elizabeth. And you know, a lot of the churches are doing jazz and music in their churches. You know,
that's
they have so many things going on. Yeah, and they have a jazz exhibit, I guess it is. No, it's a jazz event. I think it's on Fridays or something like that, but anyway, I'll find out later. But this young photographer, her name is Rebecca Davis, and she had an exhibit at the church, and she is quite a photographer. She does in black and white photographs, you know, and also, as I say, jazz. I don't know if she's doing jazz photographs, but I'll have to check with her. But a lot of the street photos she has, and she is still going to be showing her works at 305 North Broad Street in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And I want to go and see what she has to offer, you know, so I wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to mention that we should also get behind, as you know, Loretta Lynch has not been confirmed. What the heck is going on, you know?
I'm very much afraid about what's happening there, you know, and I know it's a Republican-inspired blockade, if you will. But it just saddens me that after all this time, you know, here's somebody who has the credentials. And even, not to say that I'm an avid fan of his, but Rudolph Giuliani, who once led the Southern District and Eastern District of New York, you know, has also come out to support her. And I just don't know what's holding up the nomination at this point, you know?
Yeah. Well, what's holding up of the nomination is some of these politicians. You know, who to vote for, you know. Why
right,
do you think...
Right, well, I meant that rhetorically.
Not only because she's a woman. You think it may be because she's a black woman. Could that be
My
for my.
Well, I mean, we're going to have to change with the times because, I mean, the thing is that it looks like Hillary Clinton has already formally announced her candidacy, and... I would like to think that there's a chance that she would get in, you know? I mean, I wonder, you know, with the United States and the climate that we're in, but it's just one of those things, you know?
Yeah. I want to, I think we have about how many more minutes do we have? But I want to let people know about Maria Abu-Jamal, you know, still in jail
right.
after a long, long, long period. I want to let people know that Larry Hamm, you can still see Larry in front of City Hall, Lincoln statue, downtown Newark. And he
right.
is encouraging people to get involved in his organization, People for Progress. You know, he's going to be doing these things at Abyssinian Baptist Church on West Kinney Street. And if you go to your computers and you put in his name, you know, Larry Hamm, H-A-M-M, you'll see his organization, the People for Progress.
Yeah.
Really, you know, and we have to
he's
let
been around
let
for
him
a long
know.
Time.
Yes, he has. You know, Prince
yeah,
Andrew.
Quite a while.
No, God. Yeah, he's a heavyweight,
yeah.
you know. And he doesn't really worry about himself. You know,
yeah.
every single day, how do you do that? That kind of dedication and that kind of, you know, feeling from, you know, to about your people, you know, it's incredible.
Right,
it really,
right.
really, really is, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm so
impressed.
So go ahead.
Yeah, if I might, I hate to interrupt. I just want to take a moment before we sign off. I want to publicly express my condolences to the family of Mohan Jaikaran. He's a formidable figure who, over the years, was very supportive of West Indian programming on WLIB. He passed in Trinidad Sunday.
Oh.
He owned five radio stations in Trinidad. He owned several businesses here in New York. And I'm still trying to get word on what led to his death, but I believe he had a massive heart attack. Good friend, and, you know, I'm just so taken back by that. Here's a man who used to come visit me at home from time to time, and, you know, I just am taken back by hearing of his passing, and I can only imagine what he and his five daughters and children are going through, but, you know, I just want to publicly put that out there, and
yeah.
I just gotten word earlier this afternoon about his passing.
Oh, what was his name again, Wayne?
Mohan Jaikaran. He was a very big supporter of the Caribbean programming on WLIB. Mohan was Hindu. He was of the Indian community and in Trinidad, but he also had several businesses. He had a clothing business in Secaucus, New Jersey, and
uh-huh.
also from there in one of the outlets, and he moved his operation to Queens. And, you know, it was a very interesting person. You used to tell me a lot about how he, you know, how it was to make money and stay in business. Great loss, mm-hmm. that's all I could say. I'm sorry,
okay.
Kay.
No, that's fine. By the way, we'll be talking to Eric Payne next week and probably to Dal Payne Jr. next week. And there are a lot of things going on in Newark, and especially with, you know, keeping up to people being killed, black men specifically. We really need to check these things out and find out what's going on, because it's just not fair. It's not fair. It's dangerous. The jails are overflowing, and they're overflowing with black and Latinos. Isn't that interesting? Thanks, Wayne.
Sad. Okay, Kay. Have a good week.
You too. Okay.
Okay.